Here we are in the Congressional Corner with our friend Richie Neal. Richie, I have so much respect for you, and I am so appreciative of your showing up at a time when clearly you have so many other things to do as the chairman of the very powerful and important Ways and Means Committee. So I have a whole bunch of questions I got to ask you. We've talked about the Supreme Court. We've talked about the tax bill. So now I want to just ask you about certain substantive issues. The first of all, Medicare for All. I want to start by saying how disappointed I was in the Democratic second debate that they had. I thought it was terrible. And I thought these very ambitious people, instead of thinking about the number one thing they should be thinking about, getting rid of Donald Trump, began to turn on each other in the worst kind of way. And one of the big issues was health care for all Americans, Medicare for all. I think it was lost on a lot of people. Where are you on all of this?
Well, I think the forum that has been constructed has not been helpful. I just don't think in public life you can answer questions by putting your hand in the air and saying yes or no. I think that there's considerable nuance that goes into establishing important policy. And I also think that in this age, unfortunately for all of us, we live in a time where clicks and getting noticed and a breakthrough moment and trying to say or do something that goes viral becomes the superseding interest at the crux of the debate. And I think that more thoughtful deliberation, and forgive me if I were to say this, but I do think that some of the commentators could be more helpful in the construct of the discussion. And my position has really been to expand the Affordable Care Act. And if we get to Medicare for All, that's fine. But in the interim, we're taking our emphasis off of the idea that we should be pronouncing our support for universal access. And that ought to be the consideration. You know, I helped to write the Affordable Care Act. So I take some, I think, satisfaction in the Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Rangel was the chairman at the time, in which we were able to assemble the most important advance in health care since the establishment of Medicare in 1965 with the signature of Mr. Johnson. And part of what we did in this instance here was also an amendment that was very important in the discussion, and it was called Medicaid. So one of the things that we were able to do for 20 million more Americans was to expand Medicaid. Medicaid is also now, with 70 cents of the Medicaid dollar going to long-term care, it is now for long-term care, nursing home considerations, and others. It's one of the most important parts of not just the Johnson legacy, but building year after year upon the notion of universal access. So the hostility that some have taken here, where in legislative life, I think one of the things you always have to be very, very careful of is not to overpromise, because when we overpromise, then it only lends itself to the frustration people feel down the road when it doesn't happen. So I thought that President Obama, who, by the way, I also want to say, I thought did a really good job as president, considering what he inherited, made the point that the Affordable Care Act and the advance of expansion of Medicaid and the women's health care issues that were involved in the Affordable Care Act were really important. And it has worked as we envisioned. Can it be improved? Yes, it can. And that would be my intention, to do it precisely the way that Obama and others in the administration advanced that argument.
But don't you, let me just go back to my premise here. Don't you think that the Democrats, in an effort to get rid of a man who reminds, I'm sorry, I know you're not going to like this, but it reminds me of Mussolini, is so dangerous that they should concentrate their fire on him and stop trying
listen,
to kill each other?
I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly with what you've just said. And I think that being distracted from that mission statement is going to be very difficult if we don't begin to refine our thinking and to ensure that the Electoral College is where we want to focus. Here we are 3 years later from a presidential election, and we're essentially back to the same four or five states. That's the reality of our discussion. And despite all of the conversation that we're hearing, and I understand what the debate does, but at the same time, I might say this ever so diplomatically, the job of those of us who are elected is not to entertain the American people. It's to inform them. And I think that President Trump spends his day entertaining the American people. And I think that the clicks, the follow-through, the statements he makes are purposefully incendiary in an effort to draw attention from the bigger issues of the day that we could be discussing, including immigration reform, including expanding health care, including our trade agreements across the globe. But instead, he engages in the use of technology to divert attention away from those big issues. I must tell you, I've watched now over a long period of time as more and more entertainment has seeped into the public dialogue. It is not helpful.
Let me go to the issue of trade, which you've just referenced. You know, here he is with these tariffs. The economy so far has been pretty good. Do you worry about the tariffs?
I do, because one of the things that the president suggests regularly, and I do trade work because of the fact that our committee is responsible for
sure.
it. And one of the things that he regularly suggests is that we're running billions of dollars of surplus with these tariffs. The reality is that a tariff is a tax, and the American consumer is paying the tax. Now, when you look at over the weekend, what I thought was really important, and I don't think it drew a lot of attention, that Mexico is now America's largest trading partner, and Canada is second. So we are in the midst of renegotiating the USMCA. NAFTA's 25 years old, and reviewing it and revising it is now drawing a lot of my personal attention. It is clearly going to have to be improved from where NAFTA is, and that would be our goal. What the president is doing with China, I think, is more correct to the extent that getting their attention with their embrace of sovereign capitalism and closing their markets, there has to be something that's done. But unilateral tariff increases are not helpful. The threat of tariffs is always better than the utilization or implementation of tariffs. And I think in this instance, the president is really not that familiar with how trade practices should be engaged.
Well, he thinks he's doing a real estate deal in New York. And
but
that's
again,
the difference.
It's the impulse. All of a sudden, over the weekend, without any deliberation or consultation, he announces that he is likely to impose another $350 billion of tariffs on Chinese products. And I think that, you know, American agriculture did very well with many of these trade agreements. And now, in a state like North Dakota, for example, where at one time 40% of their economy was soybean-related and export markets included China, the Chinese have now discovered that they can buy those soybean products someplace else. So the president's response to that is to subsidize the farmer. And I don't think that that's helpful to the argument either.
Are the farmers buying it politically?
I think that the farmers are accepting the subsidies, and they're not happy with the policy that the president has embraced. But largely, the farm states in America have been supportive of him.
I got a minute. I want to use it on impeachment. You know, many of your colleagues have called for impeachment. Now it's a majority, I believe, of the Democrats in the Senate. There are many people who think Speaker Pelosi is correct saying, okay, it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. He'll claim vindication if he's not impeached and if he's found not guilty in the Senate. Where are you?
I think the Speaker's correct. One of the things that she's tried very hard to do is to draw attention to the fact that you would need 20 senators, 20 Republicans in the United States Senate to embrace impeachment. And by the way, that would be a verdict of guilty. And instead, I don't know who the first one would be, never mind the next 19.
Yeah, right.
She's saying simply is continue the obligation that we have, as I noted in my Washington Post piece over the weekend, and the Washington Post piece suggested, as I happen to fervently believe, and that is that our responsibility dates all the way to Magna Carta. It is oversight. Members of Congress don't serve under presidents. Members of Congress serve with presidents. Our responsibility is to provide oversight of the executive.
Well, I have to say, nobody has more respect for you, Richie Neal, than I do. And I have to say, we really love the fact that you have come and spent all of this time with us here at WAMC. It's one thing when you're in the minority, but when you've got your job and you show up, that's really something, and we really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan. This is terrific.